married when I was 22 years old, and married a man from New Jersey who's also Ukrainian, and that makes it much nicer for us to keep the traditions of the food alive. And we then moved to Parma, which is a very big Ukrainian settlement, and they have all the Ukrainian...
Is that in Jersey?
Ohio.
In Ohio.
Parma, Ohio. My husband's from New Jersey.
Right.
And his mother, of course, kept all the traditions, and my mother kept all the traditions, and he just loved all the Ukrainian food, and I did too. And one thing, I always loved to cook, so I'd always be by my mother's side, learning how to do all these things.
Now, is your mother from the Ukraine?
Yes. My mother's from a little village called Dvorets Dvirchi, and my dad was from a town called Moste Veliki in Ukraine.
Gosh, do you know how to spell those by any chance?
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
and I've been to Ukraine twice, because my mother always received letters from the Ukraine, and she'd talk about her sisters and her brothers, and they never really meant anything to me until the first time when I went to Ukraine, and there they all were, you know, John, and his name was Ivan in Ukrainian, and Stefan, and Olena, and Katerina. My mother was from a family of seven, and she was the only one that came to America.
Oh, really? When did she come to the United States?
She came in 1913. My dad came in 1910. And didn't know a word of English, and she was only 15 years old when she came and made it in this world.
Wow, those stories of making it here, coming here as immigrants, are always pretty remarkable to me. So what are the first memories of the cooking that you have?
My mother and dad were always active in Ukrainian clubs, so they were forever having dinners and or either preparing them, and I was always around them because, and that's the way it always was in my childhood. It was a Ukrainian center, and wherever I went, there was always these Ukrainian foods that I got accustomed to and think that they're so great because they have a taste, and I think they have a, health-wise, I think they have such good, what would be the word that I could use in them? You know, like, for instance, my favorite is stuffed cabbage with buckwheat. They call it groats. If you go to the Holy Harvest store, it's called white groats. Now my children love it, and that's my favorite of all the traditional foods that we have. And it's so good for you, full of vitamins and everything, that sometimes I think, when I read the papers, you know, in the Palm Beach Post on Thursday, the cooking section, I never see this particular recipe ever printed for anything like this that we have.
Right.
Even when I go to Holy Harvest, I'll say to them, look, I'm going to make stuffed cabbage with this. They'll say, huh, what is this? They really don't know too much about it.
Well, Eastern European cooking is kind of still beyond a lot of people. I think.
Yeah.
They're not very, very accustomed to it. What was the first thing that you remember preparing, learning how to prepare? What was the first thing your mom had to do in the kitchen?
Well, I think the first thing that I remember doing is making the pita here. It's sort of a noodle dough that we make. I made some yesterday, and it's filled with potatoes, and my mother always filled it with farmer's cheese. We used to get a big round farmer's cheese, and you'd go to the store and buy it by the pound. I can't seem to find it here, but they do. The closest is pot cheese here in Florida. And you mix that with your potato. It's sort of filling, and then you fry some onions and put that into it. And then you make your noodle dough, roll it out, cut it with a glass. But my mother never cut hers. She used to pinch it off, and she knew just exactly how much to pinch, and it would make a round circle. And she knew that, but me, in order to make mine even, I cut mine out with a glass.
With a glass.
But the traditional way is to pinch them off. She makes a roll, and then just pinches it off.
What's the dough made of?
It's flour, oil, an egg, and some water. And that's about the basic. Yeah. I think part of this is that there wasn't enough money to buy things years ago, and they didn't eat as much meat. And this was a thing, we used to have it every Friday. Of course, at that time, the Catholics weren't supposed to eat meat. And I can remember my mother and dad, they used to be active in this Ukrainian center, and they'd have a fish fry. And one of the a black man came to a union meeting, and he said, gee, he says, what is that? I've never seen it. And they says, well, that's Ukrainian fish, because that was something that they ate every Friday. And I always remember that, and they loved it. But they said that it was a Ukrainian fish.
You made the pierogi as a child. Then.
Well, see, now the right way to say it is pirohe in Ukrainian.
Okay.
And if you want to be a little classy about it, it's called varennike. Yeah. Because in Ukrainian, varete means to cook, and you boil these.
Okay.
You drop them in hot boiling water, and when they come to the top, they're done.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm. Are most of the foods boiled, or are they fried? Or?
I would say they're mostly boiled.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't know of anything that's fried in the Ukrainian.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Tradition that we had is making the Ukrainian Easter eggs. I think I think one of those things I've taught my grandchildren, they just think it's terrific. And my mother and dad showed me how, and it wouldn't be Easter if we didn't sit around the table and everybody had an egg.
Is that when you do it?
Mm-hmm. At Easter time.
Uh-huh. What are the steps involved in making them?
Well, we have a certain kind of a pin. It's called a kistka in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And you must have beeswax, and the only reason you have beeswax is because it has a high melting point. And you also have to have a candle. And you write over the white egg, and whatever you write on the white egg will remain white. And then you go into the dark, then you go into yellow. Whatever you write on yellow will remain yellow. And then you go from light to dark. And the last color that you dip it in, you don't write on it anymore. That's your basic background.
Because what I always wondered was, yeah, you covered the egg with all of these different colors. How do they all stay?
Well, the wax preserves that particular color.
Uh-huh. Now, is this a blown out? Yeah.
Well, it's better if you blow them out because they have a tendency to burst after a while. But you see, this one here is 42 years old, and feel it. They didn't blow it out, the lady. She's died since.
Oh,
and it just dried up in there.
Yeah, it's rattling around.
But you see how good the colors stayed in there for all those years.
Oh, my gosh. It's like feeling a rattle.
Yeah.
Huh. So eggs were abundant.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
What else? Okay, so you've made the eggs. Now, you call them what?
These are pisanke because it means the pisate. And the ones that were hard-boiled or red, you never eat these.
Right.
You give this as a gift to your friends.
Mm-hmm.
The hard-boiled, one-colored ones were the ones that you break and eat. And one of the traditions was that when we came home from church, the head of the family would cut up one egg that's been blessed, and each person sitting at the table would have a piece of this hard-boiled egg.
Now, did pretty much all of the foods have egg?
Let's see. I wouldn't say so. Most of the breads and this particular pirohe has an egg in it. But other than that, I don't know of anything else that has eggs in it.
I was curious because that would be the one abundant, you know, thing. I was thinking that maybe
The breads, I don't think years ago they had too much eggs. From what my father and mother used to tell me, they were very poor, and whatever they had, they said they used to run to the church to give it to the priest, because I thought they, you know, the more they gave, they'd go to heaven for sure. So actually the priest lived better than the peasants did years ago. But it amazes me that my dad, like, was his father, his mother died, and he had a stepfather when he was only a year old, and that they made it on their own, came to America, didn't know the language, never went on welfare, and survived.
What did your father do?
He worked for General Motors, worked himself up to a tool and die maker, and was there 32 years.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And that was in Ohio.
Yeah.
And when you were a girl, okay, say the pirohe was, you know, one of the first things you remember making, What were the typical family meals like?
Well, they never were like you see here now, where you have to have a balanced meal of potatoes and vegetable and the meat and all that. They'd make borscht. We'd have borscht, and that's a beet soup.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they drop everything in there, cabbage and carrots and everything, and that was what you had, the beet soup.
So it's beets, and how did you make it? Because I know there's a Jewish one.
Well, I make mine just with a lot of it, because I like it that way. Just a more or less a vegetable soup with beets that I grate or cut up into it makes it red. Some people just prefer beets with cabbage in it.
Right.
And then you serve it with sour cream. I particularly don't put the sour cream because I watch cholesterol. Now, that's another thing we never had. I could remember.
Well, I'm thinking about when you were a kid.
Yeah, well, you know, I could remember as a child going out to these picnics that we used to have, and it used to be just in somebody's farm that they were glad to have people out there, and they'd roast bacon over the over the fire. You know, they'd set up a fire and they'd put a piece of slice of bacon on top of the on a stick, and then put it over the fire, and then have thick slices, slabs of rye bread, and just eat it that way. Oh gosh, I could remember having that and really think I'd like to have it again, but you know, now they tell you watch the cholesterol. So that's that. But that's one of the things that used to really make it a, and I think years ago it used to be nobody really cared if you were a, your father was maybe a doctor and my father maybe was a janitor. I mean, we were just glad to be together, and whatever we had we shared. You know, if somebody brought whatever they had, maybe kielbasa, you know, sausage, they'd have it, they'd cut it up, and it'd be right on the table, and everybody would just share whatever they had, where I don't think they have that these days.
In Cleveland, did they make the kielbasa?
Oh, yeah.
How did
they make it? Well, they grind up pork, I guess, and then they season it, but it's, I can't, here in Florida, I can't find it any place. Another thing I can't find down here is spiced ham that was so delicious up north, and I can't find it here. I'm just trying to think of what else that they...
Well, what other kinds of things could you have to eat?
Well, my mother always made a pasca, they called it. That's for Easter. It was a sweet bread, and then they decorate it with braids, and we'd take that to church. But then she'd make it even for Christmas, that same dough that you use for a pasca, and fill it with cooked prunes, you know, and make little biscuits out of it on a pan. And that would be served warm and be so good you could smell it. I had an uncle that used to visit us. He ran a dormitory for General Motors students up in Flint, Michigan. And he'd get a ride with these students who lived in Cleveland, come home on weekends to see their parents. And he always said, oh, he says, when I come to your house, he says, it smells like Bilski Bakery, because this was a bakery that they had up the street. And he said, our house always smelled like Bilski Bakery.
Oh, that's great.
And,
the holiday foods and like, but your general daily foods, they weren't typical Ukrainian foods or?
Not always.
Not always.
Mm-hmm.
But on the holidays, they always were.
And you know, they just did a lot of traditional things. If you had a sore throat, they'd wrap a piece of bacon in a cloth and put it around your throat. And you know, the next day you'd be gone.
Really?
And this was things that they did. And my husband's mother, he didn't have a father, and they lived. His mother would buy herring and potatoes. That seemed to be a typical meal for them to get by on the little money that they had.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a meal that they had a lot. They did like herrings too. Well, they didn't have it at that time like they have it now in a jar. They used to come in a barrel, a small, I don't know, what was it, a 10-pound barrel, and then they would marinate it themselves. I could tell you about a dish that my mother made, and I haven't really made it that much, but she would buy a herring from the store, one of these out of a barrel that was quite salty, and probably soak it overnight, I would think. Then she would boil this herring in water until the meat started, then take it out and take all the meat off the herring, and then fry up a lot of onions, oh, just maybe 3, 4, 5 pounds of onions, fry that up, and then take the meat off that herring and mix it with this onion, and maybe thicken it a little bit, and then it'd be served as an appetizer on rye bread, on a slab of rye bread. Now, she did that for every Christmas Eve. We would have that.
Sort of like the herring that y'all had on Christmas.
Well, that was like pickled. Now, this
is the pickled herring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's a tradition to have a herring on Christmas Eve.
Sounds like your version of chopped herring.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So this is what she did. This was a dish that she made out of herring and fried onions, boiled herring and fried onions.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were saying that there are things that you can't get down here.
Well, we've never found really a good place for kielbasa.
No. Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lunch meat that I've been looking for, and I've never seen it down here, is spiced ham. Another hard thing is to get wheat, whole wheat that we use for that. If you noticed at our Christmas Eve supper, it was mixed with poppy seed and honey.
Oh, yeah.
And they said the man threw it up in the ceiling. Now, that seems to be a hard thing to get, although somebody has just told me recently that you can buy all these things in a Greek place down in West Palm, one of the Clematis or one of those streets down there that the Greek people have. Another thing that I think is hard to find here in Florida is fresh yeast. If you remember, all you can find is dry yeast here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But in up north, you can buy the Fleischmann's and cakes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You can't find that here either.
I bet you, because the yeast would probably grow too well down here.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were saying things like cheeses, farmer's cheese.
Well, farmer's cheese, they still have it. It used to be in a big circle, big
wheel.
And you'd buy it by the pound and put it into, it's delicious with sour cream and chopped chives, something like that. But you can't find that here. So they do have a farmer's cheese that comes in a square, and then they do have pot cheese that we use as a substitute. But it hasn't got that taste. You know, up in Cleveland, they had a place called West Side Market, and they have like stalls. They had stalls of... one man would have beef products, another veal products, another one smoked products, and another one would have all the beans and lentils and this groats and everything else. And then another one would have all his breads, and they'd bring it in on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. That was, and then on the outside of the building were all the fruit stands and vegetable stands. So you'd go down there and just shop all day for all these goodies that were just really homemade and really good.
Mm-hmm. And none of that, pretty much. Yeah, it's kind of hard to get that kind of stuff down here because of that. What makes Ukrainian dishes, I guess is what I'm thinking of. What's so special about them?
I think they're so different. I mean, you know, can you go to a restaurant, really, and order, one of the things I made at the Christmas Eve supper was split peas with sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you ever gone to a restaurant and seen that on any menu? I mean, I have never gone to anything like that. And I can't say about the pita here, because up in Cleveland, you know, that's a big thing. They back up trucks, the people that have taverns, and on Fridays they have fish fries, and they give fish. And instead of French fries, they give the pita hit and coleslaw.
Oh, really? Oh,
and some of the places you can't even get in.
Ah.
And what else could I tell you that what makes it different? I think what makes it so different is even when I go to New York City, the first thing we look for is a Ukrainian. There is a Ukrainian settlement, you know, a very big one around Greenwich Village,
okay.
7th Street. And... there's many Ukrainian restaurants and wonderful meat produce. Their kielbasa, you could really just eat and eat over there. But in Parma, where I came from, even the bus drivers talked in Ukrainian, so it's a really big settlement.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I think we're just starting to come into our own, into this area. Really, I think Ukrainians are very vivacious. I love their costumes. I think their eggs are so beautiful. They're dancing. If you've ever seen the girls dance, and the boys, you know, when they dance, I just think that everything about Ukrainian is alive. Even their food, like I say, they have so much nutrition in whatever they. I always said to my mother, you know, Ukrainians never do anything easy. Everything that you do takes hours of time, because either you got to soak it or you got to roll it and you got to fill it. And it just never anything done easy. And I can remember these women who have since passed away making these weddings for family-style weddings, cooking in the basement and then carrying these pots and pans upstairs to where the people used to sit, and just really enjoying doing this. Mm-hmm. And you don't see this anymore. Everything is so mechanized.
Oh, yeah, if you can stick it in a the pot can't stick in a microwave.
Yeah,
right. Tell me something. Is there a difference between, say, let's say, could you tell me a little bit about the Christmas foods, the Easter foods, and, say, a wedding, the food that might be served at a wedding?
Well, for Easter, we usually have you can't eat any anything dairy products, you know, from Good Friday until you come home from church Sunday. So everything is no dairy products. That's a tradition in itself. And then you don't eat anything until you come back from church after the services. And most of all, there are eggs on the table and kielbasa and the beets with a horseradish and ham. Ham is on the table. And the bread, the pascha, they call that. And, of course, there's poppy seed and nut rolls on there for dessert. And probably you can have pita here, but we never had that. It was mostly this is what I'm telling you. Then for Christmas Eve, that is the big time.
Right.
So we have the kucha with the poppy seed and honey. That's the first thing. Although in my mother's village, that was the first thing, but in some places I have heard from my friends that it was garlic. And garlic was supposed to take the evil spirits away, and the honey was supposed to bring everything. You dip it into honey and you eat it that way. And then, of course, they had the appetizer, which it was the pickled herring. And then they have the borscht. You know, it has to be meatless for Christmas Eve. And then we have the herring and the pitahe and the beans with the sauerkraut. And then my mother used to make that fish with the onion on that. And a lot of mushrooms. Ukrainian people went for mushrooms because they used to find it all over in the woods. So this was a big thing that they used. They used to be able to send things from Ukraine. You know, used to get mushrooms, dried mushrooms, and you'd get blueberries. But they have stopped that all. You can't get anything like that.
So you've had to make a lot of alterations.
Yeah.
Stuff. Now, did you have to make those same alterations in Cleveland, or is that since you moved to Florida?
No, it was done in Cleveland, although I understand. I was in Europe in Ukraine in 66 and 75, and it wasn't too bad yet at 1975. Mm-hmm. But now they say there's a lot. You can't bring paintings through. You can't. There's so many things that are, you can't. Yeah. I just had a letter from a call from a man, and he's Jewish, but he married a Ukrainian lady, and they got a letter from Ukraine and didn't know how to read it. It was from her sister's son, so how he got my telephone number, I don't know, but he did send it through the mail, the letter, and asked me to translate it for him, which I did. But there's so many words now that are being intertwined with Ukrainian and Russian. Now, there was a word, they're asking for a gift in this particular letter, and they're asking for a dublonka. Well, I just didn't know what that word was, this particular thing that they want. Well, I had to go to Miami, and there's a girl down there. She didn't know it either, that's well-versed on Ukrainian things. So she called somebody who had been in Europe recently, and you know what that turned out to be? They want a coat with a sheepskin lining. Leather, sheepskin on the inside and the suede or the leather on the outside. That's what they're asking for. Yeah, dublonka.
Yeah, everything, it's going to become Russicized, you know, stuff like that. When did you come to Florida?
It'll be 10 years next month.
So you came down in
1978. We came because my husband's mother was here. This was her property, and she died. And my husband was the only child, so
we inherited
it. Yeah, so that's how we got there. And then I have a friend who grew up with my husband. She's from Natalie. Mm-hmm. And she knew my husband from way back, and we decided, gee, there's a few of us Ukrainians here. We better start a Ukrainian-American club. So we started a Ukrainian-American club, and it's growing.
Oh, yeah. How many members are there now?
There must be about 120, 125.
Now, with the Pesanki, right?
Pesanki.
Pesanki? Okay, I the Polish and the
Ukrainian
pronunciations are very different. How did you learn to do that?
Well, my parents did it, and they did it with a fountain pen. Remember the fountain pen that you used to squeeze and the ink would come through?
Yes, I still use one.
Do you? Well, you could use those on there. But now they have a thing called Kistka. Mm-hmm. I have one here. But you know what they're doing now? They're making everything modern. So they have come out with an electric one.
Oh, no.
And this electric one, you don't have to keep dipping it in the into the candle.
Yeah, don't you have to worry about breaking the shell?
No, the shells hardly ever break. The biggest problem is dropping the egg, because we do it on a raw egg. I didn't tell you that.
You do it on a raw egg, and then you blow it out.
Yeah, because, and we don't even blow it, we use a syringe.
Oh, you draw it out?
Mm-hmm. But sometimes they crack for you after all your work, you know. Mm. And
how nice of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do any of these designs have any
symbolic meaning? They do. They do. Everyone has some.
Why don't you translate the...
this, where is it? They do have, like, the drops are, mean the tears of Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. And every one of these, like, poppies they put on there, poppies are represent nature. And sunflowers symbolize love and charity. Roses symbolize beauty and wisdom. Grapes represent the good fruits of a Christian life. Every one of these means something. Periwinkles means love. Pine boughs means health, stamina, and eternal youth. Pussy willows is, you know, pussy willows are always given on the week Palm Sunday. Ukrainians get pussy willows. And when you come out of church, they hit each other on the shoulders and they say, it's not me hitting you, it's the pussy willow hitting you. In a week it will be Easter. They say it in Ukrainian.
Oh.
So, and in Ukrainian, the Easter greeting is Hristos Voskres. That means Christ has risen. And, oak leaves represent strength. Every one of them. And the churches are typical Ukrainian style, combining crosses, triangles, and nets, used especially by the Hutsula people. So every one of these designs means something on there.
Do you find any of the kids wanting to carry on?
Well, you know, I have two grandchildren, and they're both, one's going to be 10 tomorrow, and the other one 10 in March, and they just love Ukrainian dancing. And there is a teacher down in Miami who's teaching Ukrainian dancing, and they teach every Friday. So my husband and I go 140 miles each Friday, taking these two grandchildren who just love this dancing, that they can learn this Ukrainian tradition of keeping up Ukrainian dancing. And when I sit down to write eggs, they always want
to write eggs?
Uh-huh.
That's an interesting way of saying it. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. And they're with you all the time?
Well, they don't live with me, but one comes at 2:30. She'll be comes from school, so she stays here a while until my daughter picks her up from work. She works in Boca. And, but the kids just think it's great. Now, I have a one that he's 3 and a half, and I want him to take Ukrainian dancing, the little boy, and I asked him, he says, nope, but maybe he'll get to it yet.
Now, what about your daughter?
Well, my daughters both went to Ukrainian school, and they've both been to the Ukraine.
Okay. What's Ukrainian school?
Language school. Mm-hmm. They do have one in Miami.
Oh, really? What about up here?
But there isn't any right here. Which really I think is a little sad, because there's so many Ukrainians, older ones, that would like to learn the Ukrainian language, because like I read and write Ukrainian, and my mother's going to be 90, and there's no correspondence with Ukraine anymore unless I do it. So I'm keeping up the tradition of writing to the Ukraine. I write to my a cousin, my mother's sister's daughter.